Today is Thursday, January 30th, 2020. The time is 9 a.m. In attendance are Senator Coghill, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Begich, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum, and today we'll be hearing Senate Bill 136 related to state tribal education compacts. The intention today is to focus on the concept of the bill, the ideas behind the bill, to get the conversation on the table, and to hold the bill for further review. Any questions or comments from the committee before we begin? Thank you. So to introduce Senate Bill 136, Tim Lampkin is at the table there. Tim, would you give opening comments and a sectional analysis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens and the Education Committee. Before you is a very significant piece of legislation that has some impact on our state and the relationship we have with federally recognized tribes in Alaska. I think that's all there is to say about the bill in general. I'd like to go right into the sectional at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
Okay. Now, with that being said, and you've already indicated this is an introductory hearing. This sectional will, I expect it to trigger a number of questions about this bill, but again, we know that this is an initial draft and that it's going to take some work to put the nuts and bolts of it together. So as I do that, I'll explain how the bill is currently drafted, and then we'll hear from some testimony from folks. So Section 1 relates to the duties of the State Board of Education, and it amends that section such that the board will adopt regulations that relate to state tribal compact schools. Section 2 is essentially the core of the bill. It sets up the program itself and indicates that the Commissioner of Education may enter into these compacts with federally recognized tribes through an application process. And it goes on to explain that application process in some more detail. But again, this is a general sectional analysis. That process, first and foremost, will include a resolution that's passed by the governing body of a federally recognized tribe. That's the first step. It also includes general provisions that are, you know, relevant to standard contracting practices and terms of contracts. So that's essentially what that section does is through that process. It includes a new subsection 1416.310 that specifies that a state tribal education compact school will be considered a school district, and that's a key component of this bill, that they be considered a school district, and you're going to hear that quite a lot throughout the bill. It puts some restrictions on these compacts as being a district, and consistent with other restrictions for school districts in terms of their operations, as you'll see under subsection 1, defining a school term, the days in session, the holidays, so forth. Various miscellaneous provisions that, again, are consistent with existing statute and existing requirements that are placed upon school districts, that they follow state board regulations, that they participate in regional resource centers, they're required to have audits, allows for cooperation with other districts, prohibits employment of a relative of the superintendent, prohibits discrimination based on sex or race. As regards the public school funding on page 2 there, restrictions relating to how they do their student count estimates, their operating fund balances, sets out procedures for how they are paid and spend public school funding under teacher employment retirement relating to sick leave, tenure, salary, sabbatical leave, touches on collective bargaining units and their ability to organize if they wish, and the TUR system. And then, of course, again, conforming type restrictions as regards student and educational programs, educational services for students with disabilities, their health education programs, and linguistic programs. That subsection 1416.320, again, conforming with existing restrictions on other school districts, that they can't charge tuition for their standard students other than, you know, with existing exceptions for non-traditional age persons or for extracurricular activities. There's an interesting inclusion here as regards discrimination that we'll touch on here a couple times. There's a key allowance that they shall not discriminate or be open to everyone, but if the school has met its capacity, they've got more students than they can enroll, that at that point when they hit capacity, that will then give them the option to prioritize enrollments of students that are part of their respective federally recognized tribe. We'll come back to that. 14.16.330, financial provisions consistent with existing foundation formula funding. 14.16.340, again, as part of that allowance for them to put a preference on individuals, students, employees that are part of their federally recognized tribe. Section 3, bottom of page 2, relates to the public education fund. It's amended to allow there to be appropriations made specifically to the state tribal economic compact schools. Section 4 is again consistent with existing statute. In the event of a shortage of funds, if not enough is appropriated, that the Department of Education is directed to prorate the funding to school districts respectively. Page 3, section 5. This is specifically a 14.17.445, adding a new subsection inside the foundation formula that would include state tribal education compact schools inside the formula, that they would be treated as a school district for purposes of calculating basic need and so forth. Section 6, again, touches on the anti-discrimination laws. As I mentioned a moment ago, in the event that a school has its applicants in excess of their capacity, gives them the prerogative to prioritize who they employ and who they enroll, firstly to members of their federally recognized tribe under the compact. Section 7 relates to compulsory school age attendance, and of course has a number of exemptions for attendance that already exist, and it just includes the compact schools in those exemptions. Similarly, and these are by and large, Mr. Chairman, conforming amendments to existing statutes. It includes the compact schools being required to provide services for children with disabilities. Sections 9 through 12 are all conforming amendments to the definitions of a school district and includes the compact schools as a school district. Section 13 and 14 relates to union organizations and provisions under which they may strike, and includes the compact schools under those provisions. Sections 15 and 16 relate to the retirement system and includes compact schools employees being able to, or required to contribute to that system, both the employees and the employers, similar with existing statute. Sections 17, 18, 19 also relate to the retirement system and acknowledges that they're contributing their time served. Sections 20 and 21 respectively relate to Medicaid eligibility and education tax credits, and again are conforming in their definitions, referring to compact schools as being considered a quote-unquote school district. And then finally, Section 22 gives a regulatory authority to the Department of Education and a transition language to give them a full year to implement the program once this legislation is enacted. That concludes the sectional analysis, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Joe. I want to acknowledge all the effort and work Tim has put into this bill and give us that first overview of what it entails. It's a very a significant bill, I think, in many ways, a major change to education. And along the way, well, before we go on to the Commissioner, Any questions of Tim at this time? Yes, Senator Hughes.
I'll just make a comment. I do have a number of questions, but my personal preference would be to hear from the commissioner first to understand what he thinks about this and you know, if and how it might help our students in various locations in the state. Excuse me.
Right, I agree. And the commissioner's pointed out many places in this bill and has a lot of responsibilities. Any further questions of Tim before we go on to the commissioner? Okay. So thank you very much, Tim. I'd like to call Commissioner Johnson forward, please. And as I said, he's not mentioned by name in this bill, but by title, and a lot of responsibility would be on his shoulders to make this work. So, Commissioner, any thoughts you'd like to share with us at this time?
For the record, Michael Johnson, Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you, Chair Stevens, and thank you, Tim. I would just start by saying how grateful I am that you're introducing this conversation. So the Alaska Education Challenge started several years ago. Five priorities came out of that challenge, one of those being tribal compacting. And so it's been a conversation that's happened in the legislature at the state board level and is now happening around school districts around the state. So thank you, Chair Stevens, for introducing the bill to initiate the conversation. As Tim said when he started the analysis, this is a significant piece of legislation, and I would just take that one step further and say this is a significant change in how we deliver public education in the state, so it's a significant conversation. But I think it's an exciting one, and though I haven't read through the sectional analysis yet, it'll be a complex issue. It's not a simple issue. What is simple, though, is that Native people are ready, willing, and able to provide an education to their children. And so through tribal compacting, we can make that possible. So I look forward very much to this conversation and hearing from tribal leaders and from school districts, from families, and from communities about how this can help them have ownership of the education that they deliver to their children.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. Could you help us understand, in the fullness of time, the difference between a tribal school and a charter school? There's some similarities there, but some major differences, right?
Chair Stevens, I think that's one of the questions that tribal leaders will be able to answer more fully. I know the legislature's had a hearing on it. But tribal compacting is different than tribal chartering, in my understanding, in that tribal compacting is a government-to-government negotiation for how the educational services will be delivered.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further questions? Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you explain why you believe this is necessary and better than what we have now? You mentioned ownership. And does the governor support this concept?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I'll start with the governor. The governor does support tribal compacting and has been having his own conversations and exploring the issue and the topic, and stated at AFM this year that he supports tribal compacting. Why do I think there's a need for this or why this is good? Because we have a very tragic achievement gap in this state, and we have not delivered the outcomes for many of our Native students has not been what any of us want. And I think there is a capacity and a will and an inspiration in the Native community to provide educational services to their children. And I think that that's a great thing. We often talk about parent involvement and those sorts of things. So this is exactly what we've always said is needed in the system. And tribal leaders have stood up and said, we're ready and we're willing. Help us to do this.
Follow up,
please.
So in addition to the general concept of involvement, engagement, and willingness and ownership, is there anything in the legislation that can assure us that the achievement gap will shrink under this? Anything very specific, because you know, I have a heart for those children and lived in rural communities and was really troubled by what I saw. And as I've shared with you, when I was first became education chair, I was getting up to speed on what was happening in our state. And I knew it wasn't good that things hadn't improved since the 20-plus years my children had been in some of the rural schools. So I guess I'm looking for some kind of assurance that outside of these general kind of feel-good concepts, that there's something that we know the achievement gap will shrink under this, that is there an accountability feature? Because we certainly don't want to transition to a different system that would end up being worse for the students. We want it better. So I guess, is there anything that is more of a guarantee than these general concepts?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. As much as I would like to guarantee that the public education system will work for every student, I can't make that guarantee, whether it's tribal compacting or the system that we currently have. What I can do is be committed to working with the legislature and school districts and families to establish policies that have proven to be effective policies and providing and setting the conditions that we know are necessary for kids to learn. With tribal compacting, I start with the assumption that though I care deeply about every student, that I don't care more deeply than their families and tribes. Mm-hmm. And so with that assumption, I guess we can ask ourselves the question, who will care most about the success of those students? And I think it's the people closest to them, their families and tribes. And so from there, then that makes me excited about this conversation and to engage them and hear from them about maybe some specific ideas they have that they want to implement in a tribally compacted school. So what ideas do they have about curriculum, about their teachers, about the setting, about how they'll deliver the education? And so I think those are the questions on if they want to enter into a compact, what are the ideas they have that are the conditions that will most likely lead to student success.
A follow-up?
So here's, please.
Do we have any evidence from any other states that have done, I know our system is different than other, we're unique, but do we have any instances in other states, perhaps on reservations or such, where schools are being run and it is working better for the students?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I don't have in front of me any specific mm-hmm. examples. I know Washington State has, through BIA schools, done tribal compacting. Tim is saying seven. But I know we have somebody in the department, and I know the tribes have people that can give specific examples of tribally compacted schools that have worked. And then I would also point to the healthcare system in our state and the work that tribes have done to improve health outcomes in their communities.
Okay, Mr. Chair, follow
yes,
up,
please,
and I won't dominate here. So I'm sure there are other questions, but is there any advantage to this as far as if a Native corporation wanted to pitch in financially to a school? Does this arrangement accommodate that better than what we have now?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I don't know if this particular bill that's before you today does that. I do know that tribes have access to funding that other entities may not have.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Oh, there is one other thing.
Sure.
I do, and I believe this bill may be going to judiciary. I am concerned about the preference piece and how that might impact, you know, as someone who had young children, in villages. The thought that my children might not be able to go to the school, and actually I think it's, I love it in our schools in the urban areas when we have teachers from different backgrounds. And so I'm a little concerned about that piece, and I don't know if that'll be something we'll be taking up in judiciary, but I do have questions about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. The Washington State has just moved ahead on this, and we haven't studied it carefully, but that certainly is a system we should look at to see how it's working there. They're a few years ahead of us on this sort of thing. And as I understand it, this is entirely voluntary. We're not forcing anybody to do this. If a tribe wants to do it and is capable of doing it and is approved through your department, they can move forward to tribal school. But no one in and no place in this bill is it saying that they will do that. It's entirely voluntary. Senator Conca.
Thank you, and thank you to the commissioner and to the tribal groups that have put their effort into doing this. So in the education challenge, as that began to work around, the idea came up, but there was no specifics in the idea. And from my memory of working in the education challenge and this conversation coming up, it was a lot around how do we get local input and local buy-in to education. And some of the tribal groups were willing to say, look, I think we can do this. There are people too. And it does run into some structural issues, though. And some of the structural questions that we're going to have to ask is, how does a tribal group work as a school under a school district that might be have a local issue? And so as we're working through this, there are struggles that we're going to just kind of try to figure out. The fact that we're going to reach in and make them state employees might have some economic impact, actually, on how the federal government, the tribal government, the state government can actually make some of these things work. So we're going to have to watch that kind of closely. The benefit that I think most people expect is that it's organic. It will come from home, and yet it will dovetail with the education excellent requirements that we're heading towards. Right. So, am I characterizing it right? As we worked, because I was in some of those groups, but I remember having some of that discussion. That was kind of the genesis of it, wasn't it?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill. Absolutely. I think you characterize it well and framing the conversation. And as Senator Hughes said, you know, a lot of these statements that I've made and others are feel-good statements. Like, we're excited about the conversation. But as Tim noted at the beginning, it's going to be a complex conversation. And just because it's exciting and I think it's going to be great for all kids in our state, it's not going to be simple. Because it will change the system that we currently have. But I also think it has a great chance if we have this conversation in a healthy and robust way, it has a chance to improve outcomes, which we all desperately want.
On that point, one of the things that we have all struggled with, myself included, is how do we deal with governance structures in Alaska? And tribal governance has been a growing body of law and thought. There's been advocacy, but then there's been settled law that I think is still some open questions on it. And so as we move forward, this may help us settle out some of those questions. But the fact that some people are willing to step up and say, look, we can help with taking on some responsibility for that education, I think is important. Then it's the collaborative part. And as I'm looking at the structure of this bill, there are huge requirements, some of those may not work well, I think. And so as we look at it structurally, we're going to have to hear, for example, how a tribal group might look at it. Because as you can see, one tribe may see it very differently. And yet we have to look down through districts. They have to look up through their tribal group, and how we intersect is going to be very difficult. And I think making them state employees for the purposes of retirement may be reached too far. And so I that was my first, I don't know how this is going to work, question. question. So those are some of the things I think as we listen to the tribal groups on how they think that they may be able to carry some of that responsibility, and if these requirements get too far afield even for them, it's new in this regard. We're creating something with the state and tribes that has not been tried to date. And I think this is a worthy effort, but it is brand new. And we've argued over whether we have tribes in Alaska at all, period, and then federally recognized became more and more of an issue, and funding began flowing, and to the benefit of Alaska in huge, huge ways, as you have noted in the healthcare world. Different areas have handled it very differently. And so as we kind of gather this information, I'll tell you what my focus is going to be. My focus is, how do we lift children the best way we can? And how do we grow a healthier community with a better education? And for me, the fact that tribal groups are willing to say, I'm in, I'm willing to figure out a way to make it work.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate your comments. And I think there's no intention here of making tribal schools anything less than what we have in all of our other schools. There are no less demands, no less requirements. I had a person contact me and said, I love this bill because we will not have to have certificated teachers, and we will not have to take all those tests the federal government requires. Not true at all. As I understand this bill, and confirm me in this, that there will be certificated teachers, and there will be testing in order to get federal funds. Is that true?
Through Chair Senator Hughes, that's my understanding of the bill through Tim's sectional analysis, that this particular bill treats tribally compacted schools as a school within a school district under the same policies.
It's an enormous responsibility that tribes will be taking on, and if I were them, I'd be very, very cautious, because it's not easy. It's going to be a tough lift, but I think we have to give them that opportunity if we can. Any further questions of the commissioner? Sir Hughes.
I always go back to the student, and I appreciate that, because I think everyone around this table, that's the student we care about, and we want to see them be successful. What kind of check is built in, for instance, if it were not working and the scores went down? What is built in to that the oversight of the district as far as what would be done if it were failing? That's my question.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. In this particular bill, and again, I think Tim is more of an expert on this particular bill than I, but in this particular bill, if tribally compacted schools are schools that function within a current school district, then the accountability is not different than we currently have. And so the consequences of not having good outcomes would be the same as we have for schools now.
And if I could add to that, there is virtually a contract between the commissioner and the tribal entity, and it will have a closure date. Is it 3 years, Tim? I believe, anyway, I've read that somewhere. But there's a time element, and things have to improve in that time. If not, we can return to the old system. But give everyone a fair opportunity to see if it can work and see if we can raise these kids up to where they should be. Senator Hughes.
So it would return to what it was before if it failed. But based on what you said, maybe we can get clarification on that. But that does beg the question, because we've had a number of schools that have been failing for a while, which is even why we're having this discussion. And so if we have something that's holding them accountable that's not working right now, and it's just going to shift back to that, it's concerning, which – is something that I think as the Education Committee we ought to be thinking, and it's probably an awfully big thing to bite off, but some kind of accountability overall for all our schools, whether they're tribal compact or charter or public or whatever, if a school is failing because the system, if we're just going to return to the system we have right now and we have this large achievement gap, that's not very reassuring to me that we really have a check for these students. So Of course, SB 6 will help to some degree, and I'm very passionate about students mastering the objectives at each grade level, and that could be something that would help assure that we'll have success if we decide as a state policy to ensure that children master objectives before they move to the next grade. That would be reassuring for this. But just to say that after a few years it would go back into the present system doesn't give me the assurance that I would like for the sake of our students.
Possibly, Commissioner, could you relate this to Mount Edgecombe, which seems it's not a tribal school, but it's a very successful school. And my observation is that many Native leaders today came through that program. And I visited a couple times. It seems to me that it's a very demanding school. Not exactly like what we're talking about now, but you can see where a school can take on a responsibility and be very successful. Any thoughts about Mount Edgecombe? That's your responsibility as well, isn't it?
Chair Stevens, Mount Edgecombe, as you said, is not a tribally compacted school, but it is a choice. And I think that's what the two would have in common, is that families, tribes, would have an option of where to send their child. And so Mount Edgecombe represents a choice for families throughout the state. If the school in their community is either not meeting their needs or they just want a different experience for their student. And tribally compacted schools would represent a choice for parents and tribes.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further questions to the Commissioner?
I do have one. I'm just curious, because this is a choice of whether a tribe might want to do this, do you have any sense of how many are interested and what it might look like if this were to pass, how many might step up?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I don't have specific numbers. I do know that the interest in this has been growing. The UPIT School District, for instance, has held some meetings on this, have brought in some experts. I know the legislature has had hearings. And so there's a lot of interest, and there's a lot of questions, as has been noted in the committee. There's lots of questions and complexities that will have to be answered. And I'll just refer back to your previous question is, you know, one of the significant issues that the legislature has to ask is, what do we do with a school that isn't performing? And that's a really important question, because there are kids in that school. I think Senate Bill 6 is one step in that direction, that third part of the bill where we go and provide additional resources with people in those schools to address some of those needs. But one of the complex questions that we have to ask, not just about tribal compacting, but about the entire system, is, what do we do when a school's not working? One of the answers to that has been Mount Edgecombe. And I think tribal compacted schools could also be the answer to that question.
Thank you. Senator Coggett.
I think it's important to note that what we're looking for is the opportunity to give everybody to put their effort into helping kids learn. And I think the choices are very important. And obviously, we've bumped up against the Constitution many times talking about school choice. And this is just another way of saying, let's lay out a menu, and people who are willing to put their shoulder to it, you're welcome, because we want the best we can get. And for me, I'm willing, you know, for many years, so what we hear from the Native community is they are bringing their values and their culture to the table with the best they can do. And I think that is a worthy thing to say, let's lay out a table that they can work off of. And so structurally, we do have some issues. And I've worked on those issues many times, get a black eye out of it a couple times. But the issue is, how do you bring the most noble, the best we can do for our kids, and give as many choices as we can to lift everybody up? So I'm game on that one. And when a community is willing to step up, The thing that we struggle with, quite frankly, is different tribal groups define themselves differently. And so that's why a compact probably is the best way to go, because what you do is you have these areas, and we don't generally, we have a couple reservation types in Alaska, but generally it's a community issue, not a land-based issue. And so working within that school district, there's going to be bumps of authority. And that's why I think, as you try to describe it in this bill, how do you have a series of requirements that say we're all working from this sheet of paper? I think that's probably pretty good. I have not studied it in detail, but there's a couple places where I could see right off the bat that we're going to struggle with. So, but it's worth the struggle. So that's, you know, I sometimes have been the anti-dude for a variety of reasons. But I think I'm willing to open my mind up to how a community can bring its best to bear. So, in Alaska, if we don't, our kids are going to suffer, I think. Anyway, so I'm willing to look at this in detail. So when I do get into the detail, Mr. Chairman, and I start bringing up questions that look like I'm anti, that is not the case. It's just how to make it work. That's all.
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner?
Yeah. Chair Stevens and committee, I would just say I wouldn't want to leave the impression, however, that the interest in tribally compacted schools is just a reaction to the failure of the current system. The fact is that even if all our schools were performing wonderfully, tribes would still be interested in compacting their schools, and that inspires me. That's exciting. So I'm eager for the committee to hear from tribes. And though we do have an achievement gap, though we do have some issues, we also have some schools that perform really well, and that doesn't change the desire of tribes to enter into these tribal compacts. And I think that's something that should inspire all of us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that comment. That's a very interesting one. Could you reflect just briefly, just overall, on the cost of doing this? As I understand it, it would simply be the way we now fund education. It would be through the foundation formula. It would be we're not talking about additional large amounts of money to make this work. Is that a correct understanding, Commissioner?
Chair Stevens, my understanding of this particular bill and tribal compacting in general, it wouldn't be an increase in the amount of money the legislature spends on education. It would just be spending that money differently.
Okay. Thank you. Further comments? Great discussion. I appreciate you being here with us. Commissioner, I'm sure we'll be talking about this to some extent in the future here. We have Richard Peterson with us here. And Mr. Peterson, pleasure to have you with us. Richard is the President and CEO of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I appreciate your thoughts on this. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. And yes, for the record, my name is Richard Peterson. Tlingit name is Chakhyaish. I'm the president of Tlingit and Haida. First, I want to extend my gratitude to Senator Stevens. I think it takes a lot of courage to put this bill forward and to have this conversation, and I'm very excited about this conversation. To the esteemed committee, thank you all. Sitting here, hearing some of your questions inspired a lot of thoughts in my mind, and I'm going to try to slow myself down so I don't rush past some of the points I wanted to make. I do have to comment to Senator Coghill. I've never viewed the senator as anti-tribes, that's for sure. He has raised some very good questions and points in different discussions and debates over the years that I think bring about a healthy dialogue. And I'm about conversation. I think it starts with having these conversations, having the courage to ask those tough questions, having the courage to not want to sound offensive by asking hard questions. But if we don't ask those, if we don't address those, we won't make the important strides that we need to make. Tlingit and Haida is the largest tribe in Alaska out of 229 tribes. We're probably in the top 10 to 15 largest in the nation. If you counted all the Tlingits and Haidas in Washington State, we'd be the largest tribe there. We have 32,000 tribal citizens. Over 6,000 right here in Juneau. To say that we are vested in this is quite the understatement. we don't want mediocrity, and right now mediocrity might be an improvement. And so we're here, we want to raise the bar. We want our students to be the highest achieving students that they can be. And we also don't operate in a bubble. So when we talk about our students, we really want all students to rise up together and to be the best versions of themselves, have the best opportunities for that. I come from one of the smallest communities in Southeast Alaska, Kasan on Prince Wales Island. I was on the Southeast Island School District Board of Education for over 10 years. I served as the board chair for 6 years and operated in a kind of strange quasi-environment where we had what were labeled native schools and non-native schools. And that always chafed me a little bit, I'll just be honest, because I thought our interest was all schools, you know. But I've dealt with that, and I can tell you in my own community where the tribe was probably the predominant government in the community, we brought in more money, we operated more services. We don't differentiate ourselves by race. We're a government. And so sometimes, you know, you have to do things that are for your citizens predominantly, but we try to do things that lifted everybody. My mantra, you'll hear me if you ever hear me speak, healthy tribes make healthy communities. And so that is what drives us. I think we have some of the highest achieving tribes in the nation right here in Alaska. We're cutting edge in what we're doing. We're providing complex services to a wide array of people. We operate programs. Head Start is an example, and I think Head Start very appropriately here today because we're talking about education, is not a race-based program. It's open to everybody. It's more of an income-based program, but Head Start has some of the most stringent requirements of any programs around. And so I think those tribes that operate Head Starts have already demonstrated that we can do this work and that we care about success and data. And our data shows the children that go through Head Start are the highest achieving students throughout their academic careers. So we have that basis and that foundation to build upon. You know, I have some talking points that I should probably look at. But this is in response to what I've heard here in the gallery. Compacting is a government-to-government agreement to administer programs. It's a trust relationship repeatedly upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. I think trust is a key word. When you talk about the things Senator Coghill and Senator Hughes that I heard you mention, we're going to have a trusting relationship. We're going to have to enter this with our eyes very wide open, and we need to put all those issues on the table. And I can promise you, very little offends me. You know, we have to ask the hard questions and not hide behind not wanting to offend anybody. And it does become like native, non-native. I don't operate in that way. recognition of tribes' inherent authority to serve our citizens. That's what our tribal sovereignty stands on. But again, we don't limit ourselves. We're a government to government. Our sovereignty doesn't threaten state sovereignty, municipal sovereignty. It tells us that we have sovereignty, to me, tells me that we have the inherent right to work together to govern. When we talk about, and I heard Senator Coghill mention land base. I was really pleased with those comments. Jurisdictional issues can be what divide us. I actually think you just sit down and you have those conversations. And what we agree on to in the compact will solve those. But you have to address them. Klingenhaida already executes federal compacts with the Bureau of Indian Affairs on behalf of several communities in Southeast, administrating sophisticated programs, as I mentioned, TANF, employment and training, child care, natural resources, economic development. Klingenhaida is unique in Alaska. We're not an Indian Reorganization Act tribe. We're actually enacted by an act of Congress. I think sets us apart in a unique way. We're also a regional tribe, and we're the only actual regional tribe in Alaska, whereas we have regional tribal nonprofits, as you'll hear from, I'm sure. They operate by authority of their village tribes. whereas we are a tribe, so we don't need any other tribe's authority. But because of our regional nature, we do serve several tribes in our community as a compact tribe. And it's the same thing as what we're proposing here. We operate fund and administer funds on their behalf. And so I think it's a very important responsibility, a trust responsibility. And again, we've demonstrated the ability to do that. So as I said, Clickett and Haida already delivers early care and learning services through our Head Start program. While Head Start is not delivered through compacting, it's an education program we deliver in coordination with the state and the federal government. This is an example of how we might partner to deliver educational programming. The state of Alaska supports local control in many ways, including education. I think tribal compacting is the epitome of this. And, you know, I think the tribes would exert that local control. I think that when I hear our esteemed elected leaders in the state of Alaska debate issues, one of the topics is always, you know, bringing local control. And I think it doesn't get any more local than the tribes who have 10,000 years of history in our communities. Tribal compacting has the potential to enhance education delivery. As with all the other programs, it depends on the details. And I think that's where we have to roll up our sleeves, get honest with each other, and make sure those details are spelled out that answer the questions. Again, I brought up that Kisan, and we had a split community as far as Native, non-Native. We never segregated or separated out. We served our school. Our tribe donated, you know, at times $30,000 to keep our school open for every child, not for our Native children, but for Kisan children. And I think that's what tribes have demonstrated. And when we talk about successful compacts, the Indian Health Service has a compact with the tribes in Alaska that is held up as the most successful health compact in the nation. We are the bar on how to compact. And in our communities, we're often the only health service. And again, we don't segregate, we don't turn people away. And I think that's the model. I think that's demonstrated time and again that we're going to hold up our communities. We want to raise the bar. You know, I think we all agree here, and I listen to your questions. We all owe it to our children and families to do all we can to enhance education. I'm not satisfied with what we see. I appreciate, very much appreciate our commissioner, but his comments really hit home for me. You know, we're not interested because the system's failing. We'd be interested either way, and that he hit the nail on the head there. We want to raise the bar. Absolutely raise the bar. And when you look in our communities right now, for various reasons, you see we're not performing where we need to be. Health is probably at the top, but you can talk public safety and many other issues. And I think the tribes have stepped up to try to be a part of that solution. I think we owe it to be a part of that solution. We have a responsibility to be a part of the solution. And so I think that's something that we can do. We stand ready to do that. We've demonstrated again and again very complex programs that we run. We run them in various communities now, again, and they're really about the health and vitality of our communities. So when I say healthy tribes make healthy communities, it makes healthy Alaskans, and I think that's important. I also, just on a personal note, wanted to say to the senators, I'm a proud Mount Edgecombe graduate, class of 1994. Some of my classmates now are running corporations, running the largest tribe in Alaska. We're building hospitals and running hospitals. One of my classmates is one of the owners of the Anchorage Daily News. I think you're right. We're leaders in our communities. And that was built in us at Edgecombe. Thank you.
And Chief Powell. I really appreciate your comments and your leadership, and it's great to have you here, and I hope you'll be involved in this as we move ahead as well. Any questions of Mr. Peterson? Sir Hughes.
I just want to thank you, Mr. Peterson, for your powerful testimony and your commitment to the Native and the non-Native students. It's commendable. And as I have said a number of times, I lived in rural communities, and my husband actually, one community we were, he was running a health clinic, and now all the health clinics are, I believe they're all classified as community health centers where they don't turn anyone away. And when we first arrived in the community, we understood that some people would have to fly into the city in order to get care. Well, because my husband was running the clinic, he graciously decided that he would allow anyone to come there so they wouldn't have to deal with the hassle and airfare and everything. And at the time, the Native entity running that clinic was very accommodating, very gracious, and that open arms and welcome then transitioned to where I believe all the clinics now accept anyone in the village, which is the right thing to do. So I just want to give that little bit of history. I personally didn't experience it, but we did hear from others who had. So that's changed. That's good. That's good. And so for the schools, I would accept the same welcome arms, and your testimony points to that. So hopefully we'll be hearing more of that, because I think we're all enriched when we have the experiences of people with different backgrounds, and I think it's part of who we are as Americans. And so I thank you for your testimony in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. I just appreciate the comment that you made, as well as Commissioner, that we're not interested in doing this because schools are failing, but just in helping the system to moving ahead to incorporating the things that you think should be incorporated in your school. So I think it's a very important issue, and I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you. We've also invited the General Counsel of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, Natasha Singh. Is Natasha with us or online? Okay. I think Natasha is online. Are you with us, Natasha?
Good morning.
Good morning. And would you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Natasha Singh.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead, Natasha. We'd appreciate hearing from you and your thoughts on this bill.
Senator Stevens, members of the Senate Education Committee, thank you for inviting me to speak with you today about tribal compacting. For the record, my name is Natasha Singh. I'm General Counsel of Tanana Chiefs Conference. I am honored to work for the Tribes of the Interior, and I'm honored to come before you today. Tribal compacting is when the government and the tribe enter into a legal agreement whereby the tribe takes over the duty of the government to provide a specific service, and the tribe provides that service itself. Compacting with tribes is not new to Alaska. For 26 years, Alaska tribes and tribal organizations have compacted with the Federal Indian Health Service. Tanana Chiefs Conference is a co-signer to the Alaska Compact with the Indian Health Service, and also a co-signer with the Bureau of Indian Affairs Compact. Through these compacts, TCC is able to deliver natural resources, services, realty, transportation services, medical, dental, and health care services to tribal members and villages in the most appropriate, cost-effective, and community-responsive way. Tribal health organizations have demonstrated success in health care, specifically by reversing health care disparities at a higher rate than the Indian Health Service. We own our own data, study it, work with each community to address issues, whether it be patient travel, provider visits, facility maintenance, and most importantly, prevention of disease. We demand quality for our people. In Fairbanks, the Chief Andrew Isaac Health Center is able to recruit and retain the best providers in Fairbanks. We also train our providers to provide culturally appropriate care and communication, because we have learned, despite the best medical education, it is not effective if not done in a way Native people are responsive to. Now, federal law in the past prohibited tribal health entities from delivering health services to non-Natives. Tribes saw this as a hindrance to delivering community health and so advocated in Washington, D.C. to change this. Once we accomplished the change, we are now able to, through the law, see non-beneficiaries in our tribal clinics. Specifically, in Tok, Alaska, we see more non-beneficiaries, non-Natives, than Natives. The comments we've received from the non-Natives in Tok have been eye-opening to just how effective we are at delivering healthcare services. In addition, TCC provides medical services to non-Native veterans. We have come to understand veterans also need specialized communication for the best for their best healthcare outcomes. The standard healthcare model does not work and must be tailor-made for each community and each people. Tribal Compacting for Education has this same potential as we have enhanced health service delivery. Tribes have the potential to enhance education delivery. As with so many other programs, the underlying legal authority for the implementation and the details of how it will work has everything to do with its potential for success. Federal compacting relies on the federal statute, the Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act. The statute provides the authority and mandates for the legal agreement between the two parties. It is our strong suggestion that the state legislator pass a similar state statute which will dictate state tribal compacting. Now, for tribal compacting of education, long-term outcomes with Alaska Native children, indeed with all children, are vastly improved when they are raised in the embrace of family and community. Partnering with tribes to deliver education has the potential to reestablish a sense of ownership and pride in the public education system and has the potential to improve educational outcomes. Through tribal compacts of education, we intend to retain teachers, implement Native languages, reduce costs through administrative services and community planning, engage students, and reverse education disparities for rural and Native students. Some schools are in a state of constant flux due to outside school districts managing affairs. By having local management of school, local feedback, we can better integrate and train teachers for local conditions to utilize local opportunities in concert with the tribe. We can also develop teacher training programs for people from our communities to progress into the profession, like we have in the health aid program and the tribal administrator program. Tribal compacting and management of schools can help local education be more responsive to the state of Alaska's Native Language Emergency Declaration by directing resources and by having a long-term vision. Our languages are proven to engage students in all realms of curriculum. Tribes and tribal health organizations already have accounting, HR, IT, and legal staff. These savings we will save from not duplicating services at school administrative centers, and the savings will be passed on to the classrooms, providing more opportunity for students. If the tribe is in charge of the school, the community's plans and the school plans will become one. By combining management structures, we can implement a more holistic and comprehensive planning for things like capital improvement, and most importantly, social determinants of education. It also gives the community a greater sense of ownership of the school, its activities, and success. Under the tribal compacting model, the students will own the school. They can be taught to take care of the institution in new ways. Under the current model, a far-off school district or state entity owns the schools. Tribal compacting could help develop a sense of community ownership of the school. The school can be more responsive to other models of success, to other student success beyond what is deemed successful in other communities in the statewide sense. We stand ready to work with the state and the legislature to design systems that will allow us to work as partners and improve educational outcomes for children. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today.
Well, thank you, Ms. Singh. I appreciate your comments. It caught my attention when you were talking about programs that you now have to train health aides from your communities to become, take those positions, as well as in tribal leadership, and your thought about teacher training as well. That's an exciting idea. Do you have any further comments on that? I mean, do you think that that's a real opportunity to bring in village students to become teachers in their communities?
Absolutely. We believe that this is going to be key to success, and really it's likely a reason why our rural schools and schools across Alaska have struggled is because we lack Native teachers, and it's probably it's a shame because historically when you look at programs that have focused on the development and graduation of Native teachers through the University of Alaska, we saw Native students in the university system, they can achieve this if they're given a chance. Programs come and go historically, but we think as we implement tribal compacting of schools, we also must implement a training program alongside the University of Alaska, which will produce Native teachers. I heard a comment that we want to ensure that we have a diverse faculty for our tribal schools. We absolutely agree with that statement, and to have a diverse faculty, we need Native teachers, which we don't currently have.
Thank you, Ms. Singh. That's a very important issue, and I really appreciate your concentrate on that. You know, we're facing a shortage of teachers throughout the state, bringing in people from all over the country to teach in Alaska. Often they're not satisfied because they aren't familiar with Alaska. They aren't used to the conditions, and you know, teaching is a great profession, well paid and reasonably paid, I'll say, and also many people can find success there. So anything you can do to help, I think, would be really appreciated. And I understand this might be a little added impetus for this whole program. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. And I can't help but think of the innovation that in the Native medical community as far as the development of the health aid program, but also the dental therapist program, which has been looked at as a model and actually created another great category of healthcare provider. And I think that the flexibility and how nimble the tribes might be able to be to kind of break out and try some of these innovative things that might be helpful to our children. I see that as a positive, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if people here are aware of the dental therapy program, but it is been a game changer for dental health care at the Native medical clinics across the state. So that gives me hope that perhaps that in the tribal compact schools, they might break out and try something that could be really helpful to their students.
Thank you, Senator.
Hi there. This is Rudy Sanchez and Jacob Daniels from Selective Service. Are we on the right conference line?
No, I don't think so. Appreciate you joining us in, joining with us, but no, wrong conference.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's move on. We also have with us Mira Kuep, who is with the Legislative Council of Legal Services. And Mira, I think you're online. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I realize you are here for questions, but the issue of discrimination, anti-discrimination, could you comment on that in this bill?
Sure. For the record, Mira Coet, Legislative Legal Services. Chair Stevens, I believe you referenced much of this bill is actually based on the statutes in Washington State for tribal compacting. So that's actually where those provisions come from. Those exist in the Washington statutes. So we've gone ahead and put them in this bill as well.
And could you explain what those factors are?
Sure, Chair Stevens. So the provisions essentially just amend existing law and, as you stated, allow these tribal education compact schools to prioritize employment from the federally recognized tribes. And then if the school's capacity is insufficient to enroll all students that apply, they could again prioritize students from those tribes. But as you stated, it's not required. It just allows that to occur.
Okay, thank you. I know that will be an issue that the judiciary will deal with. Any comments or questions on that, Senators? Okay, well, thank you very much, Mayor. I appreciate your comments. We also have Heidi Teschner here. And Heidi, are you in the room? Online, okay. Heidi is online. I'm not sure if there are any questions of Heidi at this time. Fiscal issues, we'll deal with those later. Heidi, if you are online, just let me know and see if you have any comments.
I can't hear you. And for the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services, Department of Education. And I am here just to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, thank you very much, Heidi. Senator Hughes has a question.
It sounds like the cost as far as the BSA and such for the operation of the tribally compacted schools would be the same, but what about for DEED itself, for the department and the transition? Is it going to require extra staffing? Or are you going to use the resources that you have? Could you just touch on that, please?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, not knowing how many tribal schools might opt to do this program, opt to become a tribal school, we do not know the number of staff that might be needed. So that cost is kind of indeterminate at this time until we know a little bit more about the interest into the program.
Just follow up.
Senator, please.
Because it seems like the initial setting up of the compact is definitely work for the department, but once it's up and running, the requirements are similar or the same, I believe. So, are you talking about it might take a boost in staffing to set up the compacts? Or are you talking about in the long term, even after everything is signed and underway?
Through the chair, based on my understanding of the bill being that these would be a state-run school, kind of similar to Mount Edgecombe, it would need staffing. Not knowing, again, the size of the school, the number of kids, the number of schools, we can't project what that cost would look like until it is up in, you know, the regulations. We do have the fiscal note to add the cost for regulations, but the actual cost to run the schools is unknown.
I guess I'm confused, and we'll need that could be offline because I guess I don't understand, other than actually getting the compact figured out, I don't understand the extra work for the department. So if you want to meet with me offline, that's fine, or if you can clarify that in a statement.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, I'd be happy to talk about it offline to get more of what to understand more of where we're all coming from.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Teschner. I appreciate that. We have a question from Senator Coghill.
It's a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman. It doesn't have to be answered now, but it's a question that I'll have along the way. As I understand it, the federal compacting in the healthcare system, I don't think the people that they compact with are federal employees. And so we're saying under this they would be considered state employees. So I think that's a reach that we have to talk about, and how that might look differently. And so that was just in the first cursory reading that I had. On one hand, I don't mind compacting with them, but it's really not a charter school because we're talking about a different relationship. So that goes into that relationship with something that might be very difficult for us to manage. So I don't have the answer to that question, and I don't even know if I'm asking it right at this point. But so as we go through this issue, that has risen to a level, and there's a structural issue there. Do we say to them, you do it, and here's the outcomes we expect, or do you do it, and we're going to be inside managing it? And I think that's kind of the question that is a structural question that I saw just on that issue alone. So as we move forward, maybe Mr. Chairman, maybe the those who would contemplate a tribal compact and the state on how they might see working in the two different sides of that relationship. One is they would actually employ the teachers. What would that have on those who want to do a compact but are bumped up against the requirements of the teacher requirements? Or how would we say to them, you do it, hire your teachers, but here's the outcomes we want, and then fall into the rest of the regulations of this is what we'd expect of a school. So I think structurally that's one of the first questions I'd have is how far in do we want to go as a state, and how far do they want to go as a compact group? So that's a structural question that I'll try to ponder, and I'll look for some answers. Anybody can come talk to me in my office. There may be a way to look at it that I've just missed.
Thank you, Senator. We just a couple of comments. We have three indeterminate fiscal notes on file for the bill. We'll be looking at those fiscal notes more closely at a later date. Tomorrow's hearing, Education Committee is canceled, and that's rescheduled for February 4th. And just a comment that Senator Begich was not here with us today because he is ill and not doing well right now, so I hope he gets well soon. So we've got a few minutes, and I want to give an opportunity to anyone in the room who would care to make any comments. At this time, there'll be plenty of time for comments later. There will be other invited testimony as well as public comments at a later date. Anybody in the room that care to make any statements or give us their thoughts at this time? Seeing and hearing none, then we are adjourned.